The following teleconference is recorded for Credito Real on Thursday, April 23rd, 2020, beginning at 10 a.m. Central Time.
Good morning, and welcome everyone to Credito Real's first quarter 2020 earnings conference call. Credito Real issued its quarterly report on Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. If you did not receive a copy via email, please do not hesitate to contact us in Mexico City at +52 55 5228 9753. It is important to note that the presentation and MP3 recordings referred to this call will be available at www.creal.mx. Before we begin the call today, I would like to remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements on Credito Real's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risk and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. The company undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement. With us this morning from Credito Real, we have Mr. Angel Romanos, Executive Chairman and CEO, and Mr. Carlos Ochoa, Deputy CEO. They will discuss on the more important strategic, financial, and operating aspects of the first quarter 2020. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Romanos.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us. Drawing from its resilient model and comprehensive standards, Credito Real was able to post double-digit growth rates at both its consolidated loan portfolio and credit origination, along with a record low NPL ratio of just 1.5%, driven by the incorporation of high-quality assets during the last 12 months, despite the challenging economic backdrop amid the COVID-19 outbreak. Here, it is worth noting that the company before the pandemic outlined its priorities at the light of the situation, being the main one to safeguard the health and welfare of its associates and stakeholders. Consequently, most of our associates have been working remotely since March 20th, in line with the timely execution of our business continuity and disaster recovery protocols that encompass a number of well-defined initiatives to operate under unstable environments. Additionally, we have implemented different measures to protect our liquidity, capitalization, and asset quality, to run a stable volume of transactions and preserve key operating measures. Now, breaking down results by business segment, in Mexico, especially noteworthy was the portfolio growth achieved at SMEs, recording an annual growth rate of 74.8%, coupled with a 40 basis point improvement in delinquency. In addition, its origination increased 50.5%, but below than the average trend of previous quarters, as we pursued the execution of a planned deceleration that followed the implementation of stricter standards oriented to preserve the asset quality. On existing loans of this portfolio, we started approaching clients belonging to the industries at higher risks, such as restaurants and retailers, to support them with suitable solutions to transit through this difficult period. Likewise, payrolls origination followed the same deceleration trend than SMEs, and the NPL-wise remained rock solid, recording a best-in-class ratio of 1.1%, outstanding its resiliency amidst the environment. Here, it is important to note that we do not foresee that collection of this segment suffers any major downturn, as savings measures taken by federal and state governments, where most of our clients belong, are aimed towards upper ranks, not at the unionized level that we serve. Meanwhile, the origination drop at Used Cars Mexico is explained by softer dynamics as a result of the temporary demand shift from durable to basic consumer goods. We expect that this challenging backdrop will extend in the next 3 to 6 months, followed by a demand surge, once the environment normalizes towards the second half of the year. All in all, our loan portfolio in Mexico totaled 38 billion pesos as of March 31st, 2020, climbing in a double-digit growth rate. In relation to Credito Real USA, the expansion of our product offering to the Hispanic market through our businesses in the United States, especially in the promotion of cross-selling products, propelled a 165% annual increase at its total portfolio, which amounted to 5.4 billion pesos. Shedding some color on the U.S. environment, we foresee that the economic package of Trump's administration to face the COVID-19 crisis will contribute to offset negative impacts amongst our target market. Last but not least, in Instacredit, the loan portfolio increased 33.5% to 6 billion pesos, explained by a more stable economic environment in the countries where we operate, which was translated into a 21.8% year-over-year hike in origination of new loans. It is relevant to underscore the Central American governments have been stricter to contain the pandemic, adopting action that embraces borders and air traffic closures in addition to lockdown measures. In this context, as some of our branches have been closed in line with local authorities' mandates, we have reached agreements with mini markets and pharmacies to move forward with our collection processes, where we not foresee any major impact at the time being. Wrapping up, our international business represents almost 25% of the total portfolio, allowing us to sustain a highly diversified operation. Before these developments and striving to further fortify our liquid assets and capitalization, we have opted to delay the dividend payment schedule for the second quarter towards the second half of the year and temporarily cease the activities of the stock buyback program. These actions, together with our current cash balance of over 1.9 billion pesos and resilient cash flow generation, will provide the strength required to face the economic slowdown and fully tap into the arising opportunities as soon as the environment normalizes. Separately, it is important to bring forth into the analysis the protection provided by our hedging instruments, such as FX and interest rate swaps, which have resulted in a significant mark-to-market fair valuation gain against the revaluation of the foreign-denominated debt. Additionally, we feel confident to successfully roll over the maturities scheduled for this year, encouraged by the positive feedback of both bondholders and credit rating agencies, which are positive on our asset quality and resilient operation, which is widely supported by solid guarantees and collaterals, coupled with an agile access to local and international markets that was clearly shown over the quarter with the subscription of a U.S. 110 million syndicated loan and the pesos 1 billion rise in the credit line established with Banorte. Before ending my participation in guidance-wise, we are closely monitoring the development of the contingency and its impact to our operations. Therefore, we are still complying all the due elements to update our estimates. But as soon as we get a clear vision, we will let you know in a timely manner our prospects for the rest of the year. Finally, I would like to express my gratitude to our customers, partners, associates, and shareholders whose invaluable support greatly encourage us to overcome the headwinds. With this now, I will hand the call over to Carlos so he can explain the numbers in a more timely fashion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Angel, and good morning, and thank you all. Kicking off with the P&L, interest income for the first quarter of 2020 decreased 4.9% or 138 million pesos year over year to 2.7 billion pesos, largely attributed to a softer start of the year in our payroll business, a planned deceleration in the origination growth pace in the SMEs, and a more conservative approach on credit granting procedures to adequately overcome the rising challenge. Interest expense amounted to 1 billion pesos, increasing 1.3% year over year, including a non-recurring charge of 54 million pesos derived from a derivative unwinding of a $110 million credit facility. Adjusting for this item, interest expense dropped 4.7%, mainly driven by a more supportive interest rate environment and additional debt, arranged under more favorable terms since the second half of 2019. Therefore, financial margin stood at 1.6 billion pesos, decreasing 8.6% or 152 million pesos when compared to that of the first quarter of 2019. Net provision for loan losses totaled 460 million pesos, increasing 123 million pesos or 36.4% year over year, primarily reflecting the additional allowances established in advance to the potential effects of COVID-19. Consequently, the coverage ratio improved to 219.1% from 207.9% in the first quarter 19. Moreover, the cost of risk stood at 3.7% versus 3.5% in the first Q19, reflecting an effective risk management and control practices. Administrative and promotion expenses dropped 9.6% or 82 million pesos on an annual basis to 773 million pesos, explained by higher savings achieved in Mexico and Central America, plus lower expenses from divestiture of Resuelve as part of our efforts oriented to preserve cash flow generation. All in all, net income reached 305 million pesos. On a normalized basis, net income registered 350 million pesos compared to the 470 million in first Q19, as over both periods, we recorded non-recurring effects from derivatives unwinding from the settlement of our debt. In this regard, our bottom line softly reflects the COVID-19's effect on the overall origination activity and risk-related strategies to cope with the current global situation, coupled with a softer economic dynamism in Mexico, which was partially offset by lower financing costs and generation of further operational efficiencies. Return on average equity reached 6.9% as of quarter end, and when excluding the perpetual notes premium, it attained 9.1% rate. Return on average assets stood at 1.8%. Capitalization ratio stood at 38.5% as of quarter end, compared to 41.9% in the first quarter of 19, a clear illustration of the company's strong capitalization. Here, it is important to mention that in all the stress tests run by different credit rating agencies, we remain in an adequate financial position before the cycle. In the same line, average cost of funds solidly improved to 9.4% when compared to the 13.7% registered in the same period last year, mostly driven by the reference rate cuts performed by central banks over the last 12 months, which are expected to continue in line with the prevailing monetary easing policies, which are oriented to maintain economic traction before the COVID-19. Therefore, we are anticipating a further favorable environment for the company's average cost of funding, coupled with the arise of new financing opportunities that could be instrumental to capitalize the economic recovery and demand surge towards year-end. Breaking down loans portfolio by business segments, consolidated loan portfolio expanded 29.7% to 49.7 billion pesos as of March 31st, 2020. Following the growth achieved at all segments, especially noteworthy, SMEs and payroll. Consolidated small and medium-sized enterprises portfolio posted an annual growth of 98.8% to reach 10.5 billion pesos. On payroll, loan portfolio totaled 28.4 billion pesos, increasing 11.5% or 2.9 billion pesos, showing a firm resiliency. In the operating metrics of this portfolio, we do not foresee a significant impact of the lowered economic activity as income stream of most clients come pretty much upon labor budgets of federal and state governments. Meanwhile, used cars in Mexico portfolio rose 22.3% on a year-over-year basis, amounting to 1.5 billion pesos as a result of an incremental demand for second-hand cars over the last 12 months, despite a lower origination during the quarter. In this portfolio, origination is expected to resent affectations over the following months, expecting recovery towards year-end. Moving to our international businesses, our portfolio in the United States increased 165.2% year-over-year, reaching 5.4 billion pesos, as our product offering expansion to our target market continues to fuel positive results. Furthermore, we anticipate NPL will remain contained, as a significant portion of our clients in the USA are already receiving some kind of aid from the federal government. Lastly, Instacred's loan portfolio amounted to 6 billion pesos, an annual increase of 33.5%, following the strategies deployed to build a wider and solid operation. In this segment, we anticipate a softened economic impact from the COVID-19, drawing upon the timely measures adopted by Central American countries to contain the outbreak. And our obtained learning from Nicaragua in 2018, which certainly provide valuable insights to operate before these conditions. Wrapping up with the P&L, our consolidated non-performing loan ratio decreased from 1.6% in the first quarter 19 to 1.5% in this quarter, derived from the continuous incorporation of high-quality assets, thus providing us firm grounds to support to weather the challenges. At the light of the providing backdrop, it is worth noting, according to our estimates for total loan portfolio, as long as our NPL ratio does not exceed the 5% mark, a level that we have not seen a long time ago, we will generate enough cash to continue to grow the portfolio. Moving to the balance sheet, as of the end of the first quarter 2020, total assets attained 73 billion pesos, 43.5% or 22 billion pesos higher than that recorded as of March 31, 2019. As a result of the achieved growth at the consolidated portfolio and the comprehensive execution of funding and hedging activities over the last 12 months. Total debt increased 16% or 19 billion pesos year over year to 51 billion pesos, largely reflecting the depreciation of the Mexican peso against the U.S. dollar over the last 12 months and the placement of our senior note due 2027 and other activities for financing conducted during 2019, alongside a subscription of $110 million syndicated facility over the quarter. Here, it is important to mention that of the 8 billion pesos scheduled to be refinanced this year, we have achieved significant advances, while we seek wide support from our current base of debt holders to take additional positions as they are pleased with the attractiveness of our securities risk-adjusted returns, which are anchored to our solid underlying fundamentals that Angel well described as suggested in his letter to shareholders. Likewise, it is important to restate that we count on solid guarantees and collaterals to have all our products and business segments, and broad access to international markets coupled with adequate liquidity and capitalization levels. Finally, the stockholders' equity reached 19.1 billion pesos, climbing 19.3% or 393 million pesos on an annual basis as a result of the already discussed factors. With this, I conclude my remarks. And now let me turn back the call to the operator to open the line for Q&A.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, ladies and gentlemen, that was star 1 to ask an audio question. first participant. Your line is live, and please announce yourself.
Hi, good morning, Angel and Carlos. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is on your net interest income. We saw an important decline in the yield of all the segments of the portfolio, but particularly in the payroll loans. So what should we expect for this segment and for the net interest income in the next quarters? And then for my second question, how should we think about provision charges and cost of risk in the next quarters? Are you going to provide a grace period to your clients, as some of the banks have been doing? And what could be the segments that are under risk under COVID-19? Would it be SMEs, used cash loans? And my last question is on your capital ratio. When looking equity to assets, it seems to be the same ratio. But when you are seeing it equity to total loans, it increased a little bit. So which should be the ratio we should be looking at? And when do you expect to issue that in the market? Thank you.
Okay, would you like to address that, the first part of the question, and I address the second part?
Yes, could you repeat the first part, please?
Well, the first part, let me answer that one, Ernesto. First, thank you for your question. Well, what we saw during the first quarter was a low origination, especially in the first couple of months in the payroll business. This is explained by a couple of factors. One of them, as you look at the concentration that we have with the teachers, I mean that they barely amount something, roughly something around 35% to 40%. If you think that they are on the Christmas break and the Christmas break lasts until the first, you know, first couple of weeks of the first couple of weeks of the year, well, that sets us in a, you know, a seasonality, a negative seasonality in when it comes to the origination. If something similar happened, this year was different in with another important segment of our business, which is which are the pensioners. The origination has been rather slow in the first couple of months, and that decline, you know, especially for the last part of the quarter, that decline increased. So that led to, you know, a slight decline in the income generated by that business. We would expect that for the second quarter, I mean, as long as, you know, with the lockdown measures that we are seeing, you know, the originations in all our lines of business will be declining, and that's what partially explains the decline in the income for the first quarter. And there was also a negative effect of an unhedged portion of our liabilities that roughly amount to $200 million or something like that. So basically, the combination of all these effects was that affected the income generation for the first quarter. And when it comes to what we expect for the second quarter and what we expect for the segment to be more affected by the crisis, well, clearly that has to be on the SME front. I mean, clearly that definitely has to be on the SME front. What we did in the first quarter when this whole situation erupted, what we did is we mapped all our customers and basically we identified the different concentrations in the segments which are more exposed to the virus, namely restaurants and also retailers probably, and the other ones are something related to the tourism industry. And we believe that the exposure that we have on this segment amounts from roughly 350, 400, something in that range, that's the amount of portfolio that we have exposed to these segments that I was mentioning, you know. We are not, I mean, as a rule of thumb in Crédito Real, when it comes trying to answer your question about whether we are granting grace periods of relief efforts of the kind. What we are trying to do is to approach the customers on a, you know, on a customer-to-customer basis, meaning that we try to solve the situation. We try to find a solution, a particular solution for every single customer. I mean, that has proven to be efficient because what we believe is that, you know, the way we see things, I mean, for example, when you look at the banks, we do not necessarily agree with the strategy performed by some of the banks in which they grant, you know, all across the board grace periods for all the customers. We do not necessarily agree with that one because we believe that you are generating a problem that you do not have and that every customer needs a particular solution. So basically what I'm trying to say is that by defining a particular solution to customer is definitely more efficient. And finally, when it comes to the capitalization, I think that everybody is well aware that P&Ls all across the board are going to be affected by the crisis, you know, due to the economic slowdown in Mexico that started last year and the crisis during this time. Everybody acknowledged that the P&Ls are going to be affected. So probably it's worth mentioning that it is the robustness of the balance sheet which will give us the, you know, all the tools to cope with this situation. And in that regard, one of the things that we decided to do for when this whole situation started was to protect the capitalization. And those are the two reasons, that's the reason behind the decision of delaying the dividend payment. And also that's the reason behind the, you know, stopping the buyback program to protect the capitalization. So that's basically what we are aiming to do. And in terms of capitalization, we feel comfortable with the level, with the current level, but we are closely looking at the rating agencies, where do the rating agencies feel comfortable and so on. So basically that's what we intend to do. As long as the risk-adjusted capitalization consistent with the rating agencies' methodology, as long as we are within the boundaries of the, you know, let me put it differently. As long as we are not risking our ratings, I think that the capitalization should be okay.
Carlos, if you let me add something, we're doing exactly what we did in the 2008-2009 crisis. That's what Carlos explained. We're going on a one-by-one basis in all of our businesses that are not payroll. And we're finding specialized solutions for every customer. And that worked out to be our strength. And we came out of the crisis more stronger, much more stronger than most of our competitors. And we were able to surpass them both in portfolio and in good assets as the crisis went on. We're following exactly the same steps as we did in that crisis. The only difference with this one is that people are working at their homes. And something that I'm very proud of our technology team is that they were able to put 100% of our people online working in less than 3 days.
Very detailed. Thank you very much, Carlos and Hill.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ernesto.
Next questioner, your line is live, and please announce yourself.
Thanks, Carlos and Angel, for taking my question. It's Nicolas from Bank of America as well. I have two questions. The first one, so we saw the announcements from Banxico, from the central bank this week, to inject liquidity into the financial system. My understanding is that this directly impacts only banks, commercial banks and development banks, and that they can ask for loans from the central bank, et cetera. Do you expect some of this additional liquidity into the banks to filter down to you, for example, to the non-bank financials, in the sense that you might be getting more credit from, let's say, Nafin, from the development banks, as they will have more sources of liquidity from the central bank. So that's my first question. And my second question, in terms of the bank financing, so you have about $290 million coming due this year. I understand that basically bank loans. You mentioned in the press release that you continue to have good access to bank financing. You subscribed that that bank loan for $110 million, increased the credit line with Banorte. Can you discuss if you have seen the banks turning a bit more cautious, specifically in the last few weeks with the lockdown, with the economic crisis, if you are seeing them a bit more cautious to roll over bank loans? Thanks.
Yes. To answer the first part of your question, we are working close together with the development banks. We got a 1 billion peso increase in our Nafin line earlier this year. And we're working with Bansefi, with ex-Bansefi, now Banco del Bienestar, to get a loan which we believe would be 1.2 billion pesos. That should be coming in the next couple of weeks. So we believe that the segment we're in and what the actual government is worried about, they like our segment, and they're going to push for banks to help us. We have not seen any liquidity problems so far, but obviously banks are being more cautious. Banks are basing a lot of their decisions on what credit agencies have to say and how they see our balance sheets. But I think we are in a good position to renew most of our credit lines with the banks as they come to one end. We're not seeing this as a liquidity crisis like it was in 2008, but a different type of crisis so far.
Okay, thanks very much, Angel.
Thank you.
Our next questioner, your line is live, and please announce yourself.
Hi, good morning. This is Gilberto Garcia from Barclays. Thank you for the call. I had a follow-up on the interest income in Mexico. I understand that the lower origination is a headwind, but we were surprised by the magnitude of in the declining yields. I don't know if there were any extraordinary items affecting that. Because even comparing on a sequential basis where the mix was fairly similar and origination levels were not as lower, we saw a rather significant decrease in the interest income line, particularly in Mexico. So if you could provide any color, it would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it was a combination of two effects, as I mentioned earlier. You know, if you look at the, especially if you look at the origination on the SMEs front, as of the end of the first Q, the origination totals 2.7 billion pesos. When you compare that one to 4.1 billion, to the 4.1 billion that we originated on the SMEs business last quarter and the last quarter of 19, well, that explains partially the drop on the income line, as I was telling you. That explains a big portion of it. When it comes to the payroll business as well, if you look also, there's low origination, given that you do not receive payments from the government agencies you work with for the first 3 months, the income provision that you generate was much lower, and basically the combination of these two factors led to a big decline in the yield for the first quarter.
Okay, so there were no extraordinary items then?
No. Well, there was also another thing on the hedge portion. of a liability that amounted something for, I don't know, probably $300 million or something like that. So that's a combination of those two, all those factors.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Gilberto.
Next participant, your line is live, and please announce yourself.
Good morning. A couple of questions. Marcelo Hertz from INBEX. The first question is regarding, obviously, what we're seeing here in the U.S., and we're seeing major job losses here. We also have seen a major decline in remittances to Latin America. Your customers in Credito Real USA are mainly Hispanics, and I would imagine that at least a part of them tend to send remittances to Central America. So given this backdrop, if you can give us some color in terms of what do you expect the impact of job losses that we're seeing in the U.S. would be on NPLs, both for Credito Real USA and Instacredit. Any color you can give us. Are you expecting a spike in NPLs in Instacredit and Credito Real USA?
Look, hard to say at this point. It's hard to estimate how the NPLs or the performance of the book is going to be affected altogether. What we believe is that given the massive support that the U.S. economy is getting either from the federal government, from the Trump administration, and from the Fed itself, what we believe is that this crisis is going to be V-shaped in the U.S., and that's not something that we would expect in Mexico. And it's probably similar, that V-shaped crisis is what we would expect in Central America as well. The Central American governments were very pragmatic from the very beginning of the crisis, in terms of lockdowns and in terms of closing their borders and so on and so forth. And I think that they are well prepared to deal with this crisis. Hard to assess how's going to be the effect, what's going to be the effect on the different lines of businesses. But I think that what we could speculate on is how long it's going to take to recover in the different places. If you look at the effects that we saw in the U.S. business, even if we have several different lines of business over there. For example, in the case of the used car business, we feel comfortable with the way that the portfolio is performing, and it's also similar to what we are seeing in the Texas-based business. It has been rather stable so far. Where we have been hit the most, and that explains the decline in the net income, in the consolidated net income in the United States, as we disclosed it yesterday. You see that we posted a loss in the United States of $9 million altogether. It was basically attributed to our SME business in California. Those are the segments that have been affected the most. But on the bright side of the story is that some of those customers are already getting some, federal government benefits. So, I don't know. It's hard to say how are going to be affected, the different lines of businesses. We are treating them, as I mentioned earlier, on a customer-to-customer basis. And let's see how things evolve. When it comes to the remittances, first, in Mexico, if you look at our customer base, none of them rely, particularly none of them rely on remittances because you have the payroll business and then you have the SMEs, which are more larger. So we wouldn't be expecting a big change in the performance of the book due to a smaller amount of remittances. And that's something similar to what we are expecting in Central America.
Okay. Another question, and this is regarding origination. You've said that most of the employees are working from home now, and question is, what's the process of origination now? Because I would have thought that, you know, people, this is a person-to-person type of activity, you know, to originate new loans. I mean, how is the process different now? How are you doing it?
We're doing most of our origination from a call center for the payroll business, and it's working quite good. It's obviously going to be down from the last quarters origination-wise, but it's not as low as we thought it would be. So we're doing fine on that one.
And what about in Central America? I mean, how does that work out?
That we're slowing a bit on origination, and we're collecting through agents like pharmacies and drugstores and people we have agreements with to collect our payments. But things are going to normalize there much faster than in Mexico because of the measures they took.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Our next question is live. Please announce yourself.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you can.
Hi. Sorry, I wasn't sure I was on. My name is João Rosado. I'm calling from Banco Financia. Thank you for hosting the call. I just have a couple of questions. First one is on the new origination throughout the rest of the year. Can you give us a bit more detail? Obviously, we understand, you know, you're more cautious now and more conservative on origination, and volumes will decrease. But in terms of the origination mix, do you still have a target throughout the year? What should we expect throughout the remainder of the year? So the second question I have is regards to provision. Obviously, your coverage ratio now is about 200%. My question is, once the non-performing loans start to, or once loans actually materialize into non-performing loans, what should we expect in terms of coverage ratio throughout the second half of the year? Are we going to see mid-100s, low-100s? Are you comfortable with below 100%? If you can give us a bit more color on that, it would be very appreciated.
Okay. Do you want to address the origination part?
Yes. We are concentrating our efforts on originating the most we can on the more counter-cyclical businesses we're in, and that's mainly payroll. So we're working on how to originate more through the call center, as I said before. We still have a bunch of sellers on the streets, but they're having a rough time finding people, obviously. But we're keeping our origination in line, and we want to concentrate during the crisis on that. On the other businesses, we're being very cautious, as we did in the past crisis. So we're concentrating our efforts in lending to people that are already our customers and that are finishing paying a loan and they need a new one, but we know how they behave. We really don't need a lot of credit analysis just to see if something material has changed on them. But we will be very cautious on origination.
So could we expect, for instance, payroll origination to be more than 50% of new origination for the rest of the year?
We don't have a number yet because, I mean, this is pretty new to all of us, and it's just starting to go on. But that's how it behaved in 2008 and 9. Almost 50% or more of our origination went to payroll, and we would like to see that again because that's a super counter-cyclical business. So we feel very comfortable originating there, and the collection process is fine.
Okay. Now, let me address your second question. I mean, when you ask about the coverage ratios specifically, well, I mean, for starters, it's worth mentioning that the way we provision for the NPLs is based on expected losses, consistent to what the CNBV, the Mexican regulator, requires us. So in that regard, if at some point it stands at 219, as it does as at the end of this quarter, well, that's basically an input for us. I mean, because it's based on expected losses. Now, when it moves from the above the 200%, is mostly explained by because of the asset quality improved somehow, meaning that it stayed at the 1.5% or something within that range. So as long as my guess at this point is that as long as the NPL remained under the 2%, probably the coverage ratio should be staying in the 200% range. In any case, we feel comfortable, you know, given the current circumstances, we feel comfortable with our current coverage ratio.
But if NPLs go above, let's say, 3%, and you know you're starting to see the recovery, you would be comfortable with a lower coverage ratio, right?
Yeah, but then again, it's hard to speculate on that one, because as I mentioned, it's a methodology, because it's going to depend on which line of business are affected the most, and that's going to have the effect on the provisioning. So, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that we don't have many choices in that regard.
And on this ratio, on the loans, do you have a covenant? And can you remind us what the covenant is, the covenant level?
On which loans, on which facilities you specifically?
On the syndicated term loans, for instance.
Yes, I mean, in those cases you have I think it's a 4% NPL ratio or 5%, something within that range. We are well under that one.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next participant, your line is live, and please announce yourself.
Hi, this is Adrian Garcia from Invesco. I have two questions. One is regarding the amount of your portfolio that is due this year. Can you let us know how much is maturing this year of your total portfolio, and if you have any sensitivities out of like that amount, how much do you expect to maybe not be able to collect due to the crisis? And the second one is on the new origination, what sort of rates are you originating at? In order to incentivize more, are you originating at lower rates? And I guess my question is, what is the average yield of your portfolio and if it will be affected this year? Thanks.
Well, I mean, let me see if I understood your second question. You were asking on the rates, the interest rates that we're charging? That was the part
right.
of the question?
Correct. When you provide a loan, you charge X amount of rate, right? So my question is,
right.
You're seeing pressure to originate at a lower rate to attract more customers, right? So if you can give us an indication as to what is your rate of return on your loans right now.
No, look, I mean, definitely, if you look at our cost of funds, which is considerably higher, for example, compared to whatever the banks they have, we cannot compete with compete with the rates that we charge, right? We cannot compete by price. That's what I'm saying. So, for example, if you think about how do we compete in the case of the payroll business, I mean, in the case of the payroll business, you do not compete by charging a lower rate. The way you compete in that business is by having a larger sales force. So basically, that's normally, I mean, if you look in all the lines of business, what all our customers they have in common is that they value the service the most. And that's the way we compete and not by lowering rates. And that's how it works in all our lines of business. So we wouldn't be expecting, you know, to lower rates in order to gain a share of the market. And we haven't done that in the past, and we won't be doing it. Definitely, we won't be doing it this time.
Okay. And then on my first question?
Sorry, I forgot about the first question. What was that?
Yeah, sorry.
Can you repeat that one again?
Yeah, no problem. The amount of your portfolio, of your loan portfolio that is coming due this year.
Let me see. I mean, I don't think I have that figure here with me, but I could definitely provide it to you. I have all the, you know, in terms of amortizations and things like that, but I could provide it to you later.
Sure. Thank you, Carlos. I can email you.
But in any case, I mean, but in any case, probably the way to address that question is if you look at the duration, the average duration of all our lines of business, you know, for example, in the case of the payroll, I mean, it's 44 months, so on the average for this year, you should be collecting, I don't know, 25% of the book or something like that. And that duration is similar to what you have, on the SMEs front and so on and so forth. But the exact figure, I don't have it here with me, but I could definitely provide it to you.
All right. Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you.
Next participant, your line is live, and please announce yourself.
Hi there. This is Nick Dimitrov calling from Morgan Stanley Investment Management. A couple of questions. You did mention, the global financial crisis in 08, 09, and that you're kind of using the same approach that worked back then. And I was wondering whether you can kind of could refresh our minds in terms of how your book performed in 08, 09, in terms of how high did NPLs go, and if you have to compare it to what's happening right now, do you think that, you know, we're going to see NPLs go above the level of 08, 09? So that's my first question.
Go ahead, Carlos.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I can mention at some point, I mean, we are, when it comes to the collection and, you know, managing the book in general terms, we are performing the same things that we did in those years. The big difference between now and then is that we didn't have the SME book at the time. And what we did have at the time, which was more affected by the crisis, were the personal unsecured loans here in Mexico. So it's hard to compare, but if you focus on the payroll segment exclusively, the asset performed just as well. You know, the asset performed just as well. And I think, and it's hard to speculate about what, you know, how things will evolve here, because the difference between the two crises is that this one was created by it started as a health crisis that derived into a financial crisis. But other than that, I mean, when it comes to managing the group, that's what we are trying to do at this point. I don't know if you want to add something on that one, Ángel.
No, I think that's clear. we're really taking care of the assets, and we believe we can maintain the same levels we did in the 2008-2009 crisis. We're very careful with what we originate, how we originate it, and we think we're good at that. We've proven it in the past crisis, and we don't expect the NPLs to go way higher than they were on at that time.
Got it. Now, looking at the SME book, which is kind of your new business, and that's where growth has been, what percentage, and I don't know whether you have this number yet, but in terms of what percentage of the borrowers have already approached you or you've approached them for potential renegotiation?
We have approached 100% of our customers in SMEs.
Mm-hmm.
And we have negotiations with 90-95% of them, and about 75% as of today will keep paying as they were.
Okay, these are very important numbers. And you did say that, you know, you go on a case-by-case basis, but in general, like, if you can kind of give us an idea about the actual negotiation, do you kind of extend the terms and continue to accrue interest, or there is a grace period during which you do not accrue interest? I'm just kind of curious how, or maybe in certain cases you have to repossess the asset, but then, you know, considering that the whole country is in a lockdown, I don't know whether you can do anything in terms of, you know, you repossess the asset, but you can release it on the other side, right?
We avoid recovering assets. I think that's the worst we can try or will do now. We prefer to get to an arrangement with a customer to make them, I don't know, for 3 months pay only interest and then go on paying capital and interest and make them do 3 more payments at the end, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to repossess anything unless we really have to.
Got it. Okay.
We prefer to get to arrangements.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense. Completely agree with you. One question on the NPL coverage ratio. I know that it came up earlier, but when I was looking at your Q1 earnings, you know, obviously provision expenses increased, and the explanation there is, you know, preparation for the impact of COVID-19. But then I look at your NPL coverage ratio as of Q1 and I compared it to Q4. So it's exactly the same, like 220%. And I kind of assumed that, you know, with the increase in provisioning expectation of, you know, more losses going forward because of COVID-19, is that the coverage ratio have strengthened. And that's not exactly what happened. So I don't know whether you can explain this.
No, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, you know, when it comes to the provisionings, I mean, given that it's a methodology that is in line with the CNDB, the Mexican regulator methodology, it's basically an input. That's what I'm trying to say. Yes, you have to be very, you have to be more cautious. I mean, but definitely, what I'm trying to say is that I guess that the real effect of this one, especially if you look at the collection, probably the best way to see it is that if you look at the collection for the first quarter, it increased compared to the first quarter of last year by 20% or something within that range. So the collection as of this first quarter was, you know, solid. And let's see what happens in the second quarter. But yeah. I don't know. It's going to depend, again, it's going to depend more on the NPL ratios than on the, our efforts are focusing on the performance of the book rather than on the levels of provisions, right?
Right. And last question. Those SME exposures that you renegotiate, and you did say that you approach pretty much all of them, but only kind of roughly 25% of them, agree to a negotiation. When you do that, do you have to set aside additional provisions or not necessarily?
Yes, you do have. Yes,
you have to, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
You do have to. Whenever you have a restructure, so rescheduling or something like that,
yeah.
You still have to provision for those loans.
Okay, good. No, I just want to make sure that in certain countries there is, you know, forbearance going on where they do not have to set aside additional provisions. That's why I just want to make sure that this is the case. Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick. Take care.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by a 1 key. That was star 1. Next participant, your line is live.
Hello, Angel. Hello, Carlos. This is Henry calling from Fidelity. My main question is still around why is the payroll interest down quarter on quarter by over 30%? Just now you mentioned there is origination is one thing, but origination is it's just a couple percentage of your back book. That's one thing. And the second thing is there is, I think I've heard seasonality, but I haven't seen such seasonality in the past. So that's what's confusing me a lot. So I would appreciate you walking me through why it's down so much quarter on quarter on the payroll interest income. Thank you.
Yeah. Look, when it comes to the seasonality, let me address the seasonality part first. I mean, we haven't had that seasonality before in the last 3 years. We haven't had that seasonality in the last 3 or 4 years due to the pensioners. If you recall, I mean, we started to build up the pensioners book 4 or 5 years ago. And the thing about the pensioners is that you can reach for them all year long, right? You can reach for them. You can reach for those customers all year long. So basically, what I'm trying to say is that you let me compare that, for example, with the teachers. In the case of the teachers, that's the extreme, the opposite. That would be kind of the opposite. In the case of the teachers, when we had a major concentration with the teachers, and that was before the pensioners, I mean, what happened in December? During December, you know, for the Christmas break, I mean, normally the teachers, you know, the schools over here in Mexico, please, they go on Christmas holidays, let's say mid-December, and normally they last until the first week or the second week of January. What happened at the time, and that's what explained the seasonality, what happened at the time was that you have a disbandment of the sales forces, right? Meaning that you have a huge sales forces with a concentration for selling loans to teachers, and they cannot reach them because the teachers, normally the way how it works is that they go to the schools and to the workplaces. So basically, there was a disbandment. There used to be a disbandment of the sales forces, and that normally lasted for the January, you know, to start gathering all the sales force again. And that led to a deep seasonality that I'm discussing. What happened this year is that first you have the seasonality with the teachers that I just mentioned, and then the origination for the pensioner was much, much lower. So basically that's what led the lower origination. I'm not sure if I'm being clear, Kendrick.
So what you mean is, let's say if it's seasonality, so what you missed this quarter, we would expect to see a massive jump in the next quarter. Is that understanding correct?
No, not really. I'm sure for the second quarter, because normally the origination is during the first, normally the origination evens out. This quarter is going to be different, and this quarter is going to be difficult as well due to the lockdown, right? I mean, because as my uncle mentioned at some point, you know, having people on the streets right now is not so easy, and for them to find customers is not so easy either. So I wouldn't be expecting a jump over here, but let's see. I mean, it's hard to speculate about that one at this point, right?
I see. But so lockdown is more a Q2 thing, right? Q1, there shouldn't have been a lockdown yet. And so a large part of
it
would then be...
Yeah, but That's right. But January wasn't exactly the best month for the actually it wasn't the first quarter for the payroll business. If you look at the origination, I mean, for the payroll business was softer this year due probably to the economic slowdown or things like that, but the origination for the payroll business as a whole was low. And also there were, you know, also associated to the new administration, you know, some of the renegotiations with the government agencies and things like that, that affected the origination as well for the payroll business during the first quarter.
I see. And the payroll book is flat Q on Q, so does it mean that all the new loans that replace the old loans are of much lower rate?
Is
the pricing steady?
No, I mean, over here you don't see the lower rate. I mean, over here you don't see the lower rate. What you are seeing is the principal. So no, the lower rate, you don't get to see it over here. Given that the pensioners, that the portion of the customers in the pensioner segment is smaller, it's the opposite, you know, because the rest of the customer, the pensioners are the ones who are charged the lowest rate in the payroll business.
Yeah. So you're saying the new loans that replace the ones that rolled over are the same pricing, similar pricing. You don't see a dramatic drop in the yield, the rates on the new dispersed loans, new origination.
No. That's right.
Gotcha. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Henry. Take care.
Next participant, your line is live, and please announce yourself.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you very much for your time. I've got just a quick question regarding the exposure in the payroll loans to public employees and regarding the, you know, the credit lines that the government has developed or is developing for SMEs. Are you in the process? Will be involved in the workings of supporting the SMEs? You know, will be working with the government, or is that an entirely separate program that doesn't involve any player in the sector? Thank you.
Well, I mean, for starters, I mean, just to remember you that we, on the payroll business, we just have public servants, right? I mean, we exclusively work with unionized government employees and nothing more. Unionized government employees. So basically, we have nothing on the private sector. So I don't know if that was your first question. That answers your first question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Yeah. And when it comes to the other one, I mean, what we've been doing and that was something that we intended to do since the end of last year, was to approach the development agencies. And in that regard, what we've been doing over the past four months, is that we got, $50 million from the IBD, and we also increased, as Angel mentioned at some point, we also increased additional, we got additional funds from NAPING, the development agency over here, for 1.5 billion pesos, and that's entirely to support our SME business. So, yes, we are trying to approach different players in the, especially development agencies, and let's see how that evolves. But what we are doing specifically with the government agencies is with NAPING, which we already got additional 1.5 billion. And on the other hand, we are still working with Banco del Bienestar, the state-owned bank here, to see if we can get another line to support our businesses. But that's basically what we've been doing.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next participant, your line is live, and please announce yourself.
Natalia Corfield from J.P. Morgan. I have basically three questions. My first one is still related to the drop in interest income in this quarter. I understood that, one, there was a decline in origination of SMEs. Secondly, there was also seasonality related to pensioners. And you mentioned something related to not receiving payroll payments for 3 months. I don't understand if this is related to the seasonality on that you mentioned on the pensions, or if this is something else.
And no, it's also,
go ahead.
Okay. No. It's basically those 3 months is normally the time. That's normally the time it takes when you. That's normally the time it takes when you disburse the loan and you get to collect the first payment, right? So normally, on the average, and that has always existed, normally that lasts for 3 months. That's a period when the, you know, normally how it works is that every single government agency you work with in the payroll business, they have a particular calendar, you know, whenever you disburse and whenever you're going to collect the first payment. That's normally how it works. And normally this period lasts for 3 months on the average. So in order of not affecting the yield dramatically, what you do is that you generate a provision, an income provision, that amounts for roughly those 3 months, right? And basically, when you have a lower origination, that affects the income as well. I don't know if that answers your question, Natalia. Your question, Natalia.
Okay, no, it does. So I understand now the what you mentioned about not getting the money for 3 months. And then on the seasonality, I still did not understand why wouldn't this, if it was seasonally, why wouldn't you see a rebound in the second quarter? It's not clear for me how the lockdown will impact you there. And also, with regards to that, in the interest rates that you charged, the average interest rate that you charged in the first quarter, how does that compare to the average interest rates that you charted in 4Q19, for instance?
Right. Yeah. Look, what I meant when you don't expect to bounce back in the second quarter is due to the situation that we are living today, to the pandemic, basically, to the pandemic. So basically that's how it's hard to assess how it's going to bounce back that when you have the lockdown that's going to last at least until May. So I wouldn't expect the bounce back in the second quarter due to this abnormal situation that we are living. However, you are right. Normally how it works is in a normal situation, for example, if you look at the previous year, yeah, it used to bounce back for the second quarter, but we wouldn't expect it for this year for the unusual situation that we are currently living. Basically, that's it. And when it comes to the rates that we are charging, I mean, the difference that you see between the years, the 2018 and 2019 in terms of rates, those are basically associated to the concentration with the pensioners. You know, at some point, if you recall, the pensioners are the best asset, and at some point they amounted for 40%, up to 40% of our book. And that led to a pressure on the yield of the payroll book altogether. Now that it has leveled with the other lines of business, for example, now that the pensioners amount for 30% or something like that, you know, the yield, the consolidated yield for the payroll business, you know, increases a little bit. But it's not, what I'm trying to say is that we are not lowering interest rates in any of our lines of business.
Okay. Carlos, going back to the seasonality, the seasonality is impacting the pensioners. Am I correct on that?
The seasonality affects the teachers, especially in January. For the first quarter, affects the teachers and the things that, you know, basically everybody over here, you know, have Christmas break. That affects the origination. However, the year was unusual in the sense that the origination for the pensioners at the beginning of the year was lower, was much softer at the beginning of the year, and also the combination of another factor. I mean, the renegotiation with some of the government agencies we work. So basically, those are the different factors that affect the seasonality for this first quarter.
Okay. And then two more questions. One in about your collections. I found a number in your annual statement of 32.5 billion expected collections for 2020. Is this number more or less what you're expecting?
Yes. I mean, actually, if you think in terms of collections, what we got for the first quarter, what we collected for the first quarter, it's roughly 8.2 billion pesos for this quarter, only exclusively for this quarter. If you compare that one to the first quarter last year, the first quarter was under 7 billion pesos, 6.8 or something like that. So it was an important. There was an improvement this quarter of about roughly 20% in terms of collection this quarter.
Okay. And lastly, you have your covenants related to NPLs, and I am unsure now if it's NPL above 4%, but can you remind me, if you breach these covenants, what happened?
Look, we just have that covenant for the syndicated facilities. Because if you look at the other, if you look at all the seniors and so on and so forth, we don't have a performance of the book covenant. So this is only for the syndicated facilities that at this point are worth, the two of them are worth, I don't know, 210 million. And that's basically it. I don't recall about the what happens if you breach that one, because we are way, way lower than that one. So, but in worst case scenario, as you can imagine, well, they definitely call the loan, right?
So, so this is just to this new loan that you're talking about. Didn't you have that for your Credit Suisse facilities in the past, or to the existing one?
Yes. Those are that's the comment I'm mentioning. We just have the CS facilities. When it comes to syndicated facilities, they are all the CS facilities.
Right. Well, if you could find out what exactly are the consequences, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll tell Renata to contact you and to see what happened.
Thank you very much.
To send you that information. Thank you, Natalia. Take care.
Thank you.
Okay. Next questioner in your line is Ivan. Please announce yourself.
Hi, this is Nick Dimitrov again. Just two follow-ups. The first one is, what is your strategy about InstaCredit in terms of, are you going to give borrowers ability to defer payments or restructure or negotiate, whatever you call it? My second question is going to be, obviously the dollar price of your outstanding debt has declined quite dramatically, and I was wondering whether you've considered possibly doing some liability management, or is it all about liquidity at this point? Thank you.
Hey, Nick, it's been a while. what we are doing, basically, in the case of InstaCredit, what has proven to be very, very useful at this point was the experience we had in Nicaragua a couple of years ago, you know, during the crisis in Nicaragua. So basically what we are doing over there in the whole region is we are acting exactly as we did during that time, meaning that the most important thing that you do at this time, even if at some point you have a spike in the NPL, is to be close to the customer and to receive money from the customer. You are not collecting the full payment or you are not collecting the full installment, but at least you get money in order to know how things are working. In every aspect, you have to be empathic with the situation that the customer they are living, and you have to be more lenient in that regard. But what we aim to do, in every case, is to collect, to try to collect a, at least a small fraction of the payment of the installment. That's how we normally proceed, right? Even if at some point you have a spike in the NPL, but you get to know what your customer is, so to speak.
Right.
And addressing your question, and addressing your second question, well, right now it's hard to look in terms of, hard to think in terms of liability management exercises and so on and so forth. So basically we're focusing on the liquidity, and we are taking good care of the liquidity.
Okay, okay. And just on Insta Credit, I assume that you're basically waiting to be approached, considering how granular the business is, rather than approach borrowers proactively the way you did in the case of SMEs. You're basically waiting for the borrowers to become delinquent, and then you kind of start addressing the issue.
No, really.
Exactly.
You're still
proactive.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next questioner, your line is live.
Hello, this is Maria. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we do.
Okay, yeah, I have some questions. This is Teresa from Seminario Peru. Some questions. I wonder so the financial regulator, the CNBB, has given flexibility to. Do you apply for that flexibility? Particularly, I want to know how will be the accounting for the provision. Thank you.
Yeah, you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, basically, we haven't changed the way we provision. We haven't changed the way we the provision. And normally the changes that the CNBB has, you know, normally the changes, if any, that the CNBB has announced lately, they're more involved. Those changes involve the banks, but in any case, we haven't changed the way we provision.
Okay, so you don't apply for that, right?
No.
Okay. Okay, so maybe if I could also be given by email the information about the. How much do you expect to collect this year? And that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Definitely. If you could send us an email, because we don't have your phone number, we just have Maria over here. So shoot us an email and we'll provide you with that information.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next participant, your line is live, and please announce yourself.
Hi, this is Justin Ziga from Eaton Vance. Two quick questions. You talked a bit about working with your customers in SMEs. How do you work with your customers in a payroll lending segment where you already have access to the cash from the payroll? And what kind of things do you look to do there? And number two, kind of related to that, as you look at origination for 2020, and you said you're focusing really on your existing customers. How much of this is really just sort of re-upping into a new loan for existing customers in payroll versus growing the pot of payroll available? I mean, it's kind of a growth-driven model, but it's hard to see as you're focused on your existing customer base how growth will be that much more dramatic or to keep up to boost the yield you need to keep going.
Okay. When it comes to the big difference between the SMEs and the payroll business, I mean, in the case of the SMEs, the customer pays. I mean, you are following. Let me put it differently. I mean, in the case of the payroll business, the collection process hasn't changed, and we are not required to approach the customers all the customers, because we collect when it comes to the collection, we collect directly from the employer, and that hasn't changed, right? I don't know if I'm being clear. So the big difference is that in the case of the SMEs, there has to exist a willingness to repay, and that situation doesn't exist in the case of, the payroll business, because we get the money straight from the employer. You know, so basically we are approaching the SMEs, the customers, we are approaching the used car business, all the other lines of businesses, except for the payroll business, where we collect straight from the employer. So basically that's the big difference. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answers your first question.
It does, but is there any sort of back and forth or request for renegotiation from those customers, and how do you deal with that?
It's similar to what I described in the case, for example, in the case of InstaCredit or something like that. It's first that we focused on the segments in the case, speaking about the SME business specifically. You focus on there first. What we did first was to focus on the segments of our portfolio most exposed to the pandemic, right? So the restaurants and things like that, and try to figure out a way to solve the situation. You know, as Angel mentioned at some point, yes, in the worst case scenario, what we do is we repossess the asset because we have collateral, so we are the owners or whatever you want in that regard. But before getting into that, we try to find a solution. But in any case, normally it's a different solution for every customer. But what we intend to do on every case is to collect some money from the customers in order to know the prevailing situation of the business. That's for the SMEs, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
As a reminder, please press star 1 to ask an audio question. Next participant, your line is live in the conference.
Hello, thanks for making the call. This is Roger Horn from SMBC Securities in New York. I'm still having a hard time understanding the 800 basis point drop in yield. Can you help me understand it? Is a large portion of that due to your proactive risk management by going to SMEs and other clients and saying, okay, I understand you will not have revenues for the next 3 months, so let me give you this new loan that defers payments and dramatically reduces the coupon for a short time so that you can still manage and see, as you said, the credit quality, their ability to pay something?
No, we're not granting new loans. I mean, you have two situations in that regard. I mean, the new loans that we are granting are not restructures or are not to repay existing loans. That's on the one hand. And when we have a situation, when we have a problem with a particular customer with our loan that we already disbursed, is when we try to find, you know, a solution for them that in every case involves payments from the side of the customer. I don't know
it's the same question. So you're changing the terms of the loan to lower the interest rate for a short time, but still make sure that the company, that the SME or whoever pays you something so that you can see their ongoing credit quality. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. But not necessarily lowering the interest rate. And quite frankly, we do not lower the interest rate. What we lower is the amount that they pay, and it's either, you know, let me put it differently. I mean, we could extend the duration and charge them, I don't know, for example, 6% for extending that duration of an existing loan. I don't know if I'm being clear. So it's basically it sums it up in terms of they have to pay something, we have to receive some money, but we are not lowering the interest rate that they pay at the region at the beginning.
The yield to me is interest received during the quarter divided by average portfolio, right?
That is correct.
You're getting
and
less
in that
interest.
Regard,
yes.
And in that regard, yes, you are lowering the yield, but you are not lowering the interest rate paid by the customer.
Okay. Thank you for that clarity.
You're lowering the yield in the sense that you are not receiving the full payment, but the customer you are not lowering the interest rate that the customer paid or originally accepted, right?
So they'll eventually pay you that interest at a later date. Partially deferred. Okay.
Yes.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger.
At this time, we have no further questions in queue, and I would like to turn it back over to today's speakers.
Thank you, operator.
Well, thank you. Go ahead, Carlos.
No, thank you, operator, and thank you all for participating in this call.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.